Welcome to the Business Radio Network. Enjoy Small Biz, Big Voices with Stephanie Rising.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Rising, a business coach and author in beautiful Tucson, Arizona. Being a small business owner is rewarding, but can feel lonely. Few people understand what it's like to sweat payroll, market themselves as a brand, or create revenue streams from scratch. For the next hour, join your tribe on Small Biz, Big Voices, the podcast that celebrates the stories and impact of your fellow small business owners. Today, I'm hosting our first anniversary show with a panel of Tucson's arts and entertainment gurus. My guests are Karen Fogus of the Fox Tucson Theater, Curtis McCrary of the Rialto Theater, and Kate Calhoun of the Tucson Convention Center. Our interview will conclude with a Proust lightning round, and our final segment will be Dear Coach, when I'll coach listeners through issues they've emailed in. First, it's my pleasure to introduce three individuals who play a large role in Tucsonans' happiness. Karen Fogus is the Director of Development for the Fox Tucson Theater. The Fox opened in 1930 as a dual vaudeville and movie house. After a six-year, $14 million rehab, the theater reopened on New Year's Eve, 2006. The Fox Tucson Theater Foundation was able to get the building listed on the National Register of Historic Places due to its unique Southwestern Art Deco style, as well as its world-class acoustics. The impact of the reopened historic theater on downtown, the larger community of Tucson, and on Southern Arizona as a whole has been profound. The Fox now hosts over 150 events each year and sees over 75,000 patrons through its doors. The 1,164-seat capacity is big enough to attract national and international talent, yet small enough to boast an intimate entertainment experience. Curtis McCrary is the executive director of the Rialto Theater. He was also a recent nominee at the Executive Excellence Awards in November, which I attended. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Since 1920, the Rialto has provided a variety of entertainment to Tucsonans, including vaudeville, talking pictures, musical reviews, and Spanish language films. It is now known as a concert venue, showcasing artists across all genres of music and performance. Over the last 10 years, the Rialto has become a top 100 major club venue worldwide, and it is consistently ranked among the top 55 such venues by ticket sales. Consequence of Sound recently named the Rialto number 84 in the 100 greatest American music venues. As the theater approaches its 100th anniversary in 2020, it now hosts 200 events and draws over 100,000 patrons annually. Kate Calhoun is the Director of Sales and Marketing for the Tucson Convention Center. With 205,000 square feet of meeting and event space, the TCC has the size and flexibility to accommodate every type of meeting, convention, trade show, or banquet event you may be planning. In addition to their meeting space, the TCC has three performance facilities that are appropriate for sporting events, ice shows, theatrical performances, and concerts. Savor Tucson, their in-house catering and concession company, features an eclectic range of international, regional, and heart-healthy fare. On October 1st of last year, the TCC joined a new family of over 300 of the world's most prestigious arenas, stadiums, convention centers, and performing arts venues. They are now part of a venue management powerhouse that spans five continents and 14 countries. Welcome all to the show, and thank you so much for spending time with us today. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to start the new year with this panel because I love Tucson. And I think that the venues that you each represent play a huge part, not only in the downtown renaissance, but also just in Tucson's ability to keep our own unique identity. And I wanted everyone to have a voice on the show because the three of you do a lot to bring us a lot of happiness and a lot of great memories, especially I know George, my husband, and I feel that way. So a lot of this work is transparent to the average theater goer. So this is your shot, guys. Tell us what it's like. I imagine with the variety of events that you each coordinate, the logistics that you manage are substantial. You're also serving a diverse community with their own opinions about the entertainment that they want. So I'm curious to know, what is your thought process when you're booking events and shows? Do you have a particular mission that you're trying to achieve? either for your venue or, you know, are there things about the greater Tucson community that come to mind? And Karen, I'll start with you.
Hi, thank you. The Fox definitely has a core audience, and that seems to gravitate toward country, singer-songwriter, and classic rock genres. And So we're always keeping those folks in mind as we're doing the programming for the Fox. But because our mission is also to excite, entertain, educate, and engage the community, the whole community, one of the things that excites me about the Fox Tucson Theater is the emphasis on bringing in, for example, our world music series, which really exposes the community to a little different flavor than what they're used to.
Yeah.
Another area that we've been emphasizing over the last year has been our Kids in the Theater program kit, which is also the mascot for the theater, the Fox mascot for the theater. And so really trying to get kids in and expose them, start to build those memories just like you and your husband enjoy, but starting at an early age and getting kids in who may not otherwise have that opportunity. And
that's
so
cool.
I love that the Fox really has that core audience, but we're always trying to push the envelope and see if we can't bring other new people in as well and expose them to all that the Fox Tucson has to offer. So
thank you. Curtis, how about you?
Well, my philosophy as a buyer of talent has always just been a simple phrase, which is catch as catch can. And in Tucson, we're kind of constrained to an extent by the size of the market relative to Phoenix in particular, but other larger markets. Touring artists tend to want to play as big of places as they can in a routed tour for efficiency reasons. And so essentially, my focus is always like, what is potentially available? What can we possibly get our hands on to book? And fundamentally, if there's an audience for it, then I'm interested in booking it. And I don't turn my nose up at anything when it comes to whatever, you know, I respect the fact that someone is interested in or a fan of a particular style of music. And so if there's enough of those people, for whatever it is, then I'm going to try to find a way to program it. And we obviously have some things that we are more proficient in than others. We do a lot of hip hop, obviously, and rock and indie rock and things like that. But as you mentioned, world music is also something that I find, you know, very interesting, and I want to program, even though the audiences for that tend to be smaller. But still, I think it's important that we cast a wide net when it comes to those kinds of things that are a little further afield than what is standard. And essentially, bottom line is that if there are people that will come, and it is more likely than not that it's not going to cost us money or lose us money in the net, then we're going to try to do it.
And Tucson is such a relationship-driven town. I think, you know, marketing works a little bit differently here. Have you ever been pleasantly surprised bringing in an act that was relatively unknown, but then people started to talk about it, share it with other people, and it just grew?
Well, we've gotten lucky sometimes, but it doesn't necessarily have to do with Tucson. One that comes to mind is we had the band Fun booked in early 2012, and we were expecting, you know, 400 or 500 people. They were the offshoot of another band that had middling success that was based in Phoenix. And then their huge hit, We Are Young, was a song played on advertisements for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And it just really took off. That can happen from time to time, where you book something and you get lucky where something huge happens for that act between when you book it and when the performance was. And in that case, they, you know, it sold out kind of instantly after that song took off in the wake of the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, more often than not, I'm unpleasantly surprised where I'm, you know, I think, oh yeah, you know, this is really great. People are going to love this and catch on to it. rather than the other way around. But yes, occasionally it's the case where there will something will develop a buzz and catch on. And another one that comes to mind is the first time that the Avett Brothers played Tucson, I offered a money back guarantee because I loved that band so much. And I knew that the prospects of having a large audience were low. But I said, if you come to the show and don't walk away going, that's a terrific band, then we'll give you your money back. And the first time through, they drew 75 paying customers. The second time it was 200, then 400, wow, then 1,000. And then the most recent time we had them, we did it at the TCC Music Hall. So they're the kind of band that where you just believe in them and put that out there and people respond.
That's really great. Yeah. So that kind of dovetails, you know, Kate, what drives your decisions when you're booking shows for the TCC, and how much of that is in coordination with venues like the Fox and the Rialto?
So what's different with the TCC from the Fox and from the Rialto is that we do not buy shows. Okay. So you had mentioned relationships earlier. So we have relationships with promoters, with people like Curtis and with Andrew and everyone at the Fox, and we'll work with them directly and see how we can accommodate their show. In the case of Avett Brothers, they outgrew the Rialto, so we work very closely with Curtis. Mm. We're working right now on another show with Curtis coming up here in the near future, Daniel Tiger, for example. So, you know, our mission is really to provide community events to our community, which is very diversified. So whether we have Monster Jam taking place in the arena, Arizona Opera taking place in the Tucson Music Hall, and the engineering exams taking place in the meeting rooms, and a State of the City address happening in the ballroom. So we're diverse. So you have no idea what event might be going on at the convention center at one given day. And, you know, we want to make sure that that diversification continues. So working with Curtis or working with Live Nation, for example, Live Nation brings us beautiful shows in the arena. You know, but like Curtis, I'd like to see more hip hop shows. We had Migos a few years ago and they were fantastic in the exhibit halls. So if we can get another hip hop show in the exhibit hall, that would be terrific.
And you had Drake back in.
We had Drake in 2012. Drake was a sold out show. Yeah, Live Nation instantly brought that show. So, just to dovetail, and you're talking about memories, you know, our philosophy is we are creating memories for people. So whether they be the first concert that you've attended, mm-hmm, you know, similar to you, I've been here since I was young. And my first concert that I attended was Jackson Browne in the arena. And since then, I've been able to host him twice, working in the building. I graduated from high school in the Tucson Music Hall and went to Sal Point. So they are very memorable experiences that take place. We have weddings and quinceañeras and, you know, we provide a lot for the community. Home shows. Yeah,
it's very diverse. And it's something that I have a new appreciation for is how much you all work together in order to bring things to Tucson, that it isn't competitive in terms of your attitude, you know, our venue versus other venues. It's what can we bring to Tucson? So that's very refreshing and very eye-opening. Is there anything else that you wish that the public better understood about bringing shows to Tucson?
As far as I'm concerned, I want to help educate the public in letting them know that we don't buy the shows. Mm. So I can't pick up the telephone and call Bon Jovi and say, Bon Jovi, can you come play TCC? But I can pick up the telephone and call the promoter, if it's Live Nation or AEG, for example, and say, are you touring? Are you coming through the Tucson market? Mm. Are you routing from east to west, north to south? So those are things that we take into consideration consideration when we're trying to bring in a show. The music hall is becoming more and more popular for booking shows. So, you know, in the case of Foreigner, that'll be coming in later in April, you know, we were able to book the Foreigner show based upon their routing. And are they going from San Diego to Tucson to El Paso to Dallas?
So how do you, are you finding more so now than maybe in the past that shows that are going through Phoenix, will they make a stop in Tucson, or are we getting closer to them considering that instead of being a secondary market? Or is it just pragmatic to accept Phoenix is a much bigger market, they have more arenas, and that's where certain shows are just going to be?
That's a really good question. So some of the contracts that the agents have say that they cannot play within 100 miles, 200 miles, for example.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And then the other interesting piece of information is we can accommodate about a 7,500, maybe 8,000 person show. Mm. So take into consideration Jay-Z and Beyonce that performed at our sister building, State Farm Arena, or State Farm Stadium, excuse me, up in Phoenix. They packed the house, and we can only sell 8,000 tickets. You know, the Tucson community is not going to buy, you know, a $500 ticket, a $1,000 ticket in order to accommodate the agent's price tag or the artist's price tag.
Okay.
Yeah, if I could add on to that.
Yeah, please do.
In my experience, and I've been programming things in downtown Tucson since 2001 or so, and it feels that the distance between Tucson and Phoenix in terms of its relative size has increased. Tucson has grown more slowly than Phoenix has on average, and it used to be, you know, between 4 and 4.5 times as big. Now it's getting closer to 5 times as big. But also there's changes in the Phoenix market such that, it gets harder and harder, honestly, because as I said, when they're routing tours, they want to be as efficient as possible. So rather than take, if they're going to program 30 dates on their routed tour, take a market that is somewhere in the 60 or 70th biggest, market size versus a market that is the 12th biggest in the country. They're obviously going to favor Phoenix over Tucson.
Sure.
And, there was a venue that opened in 2017 called the Van Buren that holds 2000 people. Rialto holds 1300. So as Kate was pointing out, you can't get a stadium show into an 8,000 person arena.
Right.
We can't offer enough money in our 1300 capacity venue to attract someone that would prefer to play a 2000 capacity venue, and all things being equal, they're going to sell out. So it's, which one do you take? And then they could stay, you know, a short trip to Tucson and stay in the state. But why do that when Tucson people will go to Phoenix if the artist is compelling enough? And
true,
then they're one day closer to getting into California, or they're one day closer into getting into Texas, where there are multiple of the top 20 markets in the country. So it's become, especially in the last couple of years, quite a bit more difficult to attract talent. And we try to get literally everything that even, you know, is thinking about coming through the Southwest. And frequently it's the case where we just can't get through because we're not competitively sized relative to Phoenix, but that doesn't stop us from trying. And that's not to say that no one wants to play Tucson. Obviously that's not the case. I mean, you know, we all three, program the hell out of our places, but,
yes.
But it is, it's difficult to be this close with radius clauses, with larger venues in a bigger market, and with that general preference that the industry has for playing as big of a market as you possibly can to maximize your routing.
Which I think makes sense.
Yeah.
And I don't begrudge the artists that.
Neither.
And I don't think that this is true of all Tucsonans, but I do think, you know, every once in a while I run into a handful of people, and there's kind of this chip on the shoulder that Tucson is the bastard stepchild of Phoenix, and like the uncool things come here. But I don't think that they're really taking the time to even scratch the surface of all that is available here and the work that you are doing.
I think Tucson across the board punches above its weight and gets way more stuff than we have any really right to give relative. Like if you look at Nielsen TV markets, Tucson is 73rd. If you look at metropolitan statistical area, Tucson is like 53rd. So, you know, we're really on the border of like tertiary rather than even secondary. Mm-hmm. And the amount of talent and programming that comes to, you know, not just the venues that are represented by the three people sitting here, but to other clubs and other places is pretty phenomenal.
I think it's awesome. Yeah. And like I said at the beginning of the show, I mean, to me, New Year's is about celebrating. And I really wanted to have the three of you on to celebrate what it is that you do achieve on behalf of our community, because yeah. I have a great time with what great. You bring.
We need more like you.
And I think that
I'm preaching.
That's the message that we'd like to get across, is there is a tremendous amount that's going on in that downtown area that, you know, so many people haven't experienced. I have people tell me all the time, this is my first time to the theater. I can't believe it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's just growing and growing. There is so much to take advantage of. I think that's what we'd like to get out there, is there's just so much to partake in downtown. Mm-hmm. Get down there and experience it.
George and I got online over the weekend and we bought tickets to things going on at all three venues today, by the way.
Thank you.
But when we were going through the events calendar, I mean, it was really hard to sort of choose and narrow down, you know, all right, we can only see so many shows.
Yeah, yeah. What are you coming to see?
We always go to I go to the opera with a friend.
Okay.
So we go to the opera, and then I'm also looking at going to the, is it Shenyun?
Shenyun.
Mm-hmm. That looks incredible.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. This is the third year.
The third year?
That they've been with us.
Look, that looks spectacular. Definitely going to Zep USA.
Oh, they're terrific. Have you seen them before?
Oh, yeah.
And the singer...
Brody.
Yeah, Brody does not look a lot like Robert Plant, but if you close your eyes, it really, like, their sound is so spot on for Zeppelin, and they attract a huge audience, and we really, this is actually, I think, the third or fourth year that we've programmed them in January, and they just do an amazing job.
Rocked it last year.
Top tier of, like, you know, I mean, it's kind of beyond a tribute. It's just, like, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, no, he channels Plant, which ironically was the first concert that I ever went to, and it was at the TCC arena.
You remember, we created your memory, didn't we?
Yes, and at the Fox, we're going to Femmes of Rock.
Uh-huh.
And there was one other thing. Oh, and we're going to the Cream tribute.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we've got tickets like going into April for
fantastic.
Things.
Fantastic. Yeah, excited. There's some great shows coming up.
Really fun stuff. So there was one thing I wanted to kind of touch on, the fact that this podcast is typically geared to small business owners, but I really enjoy inviting executives on the show, because the work that you're doing within the larger organizations affects the Tucson economy, which certainly affects small business. So I was curious, you know, what kind of economic ripple effects are created by the events that each of your venues host? And do you have specific ways of tracking that? And Kate, I'll start with you on this one.
Okay, thank you. Yes, we absolutely do have ways of tracking that. So I suspect you're familiar with Rio Nuevo. Mm-hmm. So Rio Nuevo, back in 1999, created a TIF district, which is a tax increment finance district. And they support the Tucson Convention Center. So every tax dollar that is spent in that TIF district goes back into the district to develop and to build more infrastructure. So, you know, for example, we did a big development in the arena a few years ago. The Rio Nuevo board just blessed a $65 million renovation project in the Tucson Convention Center.
I saw that in the paper. That's awesome.
So that's coming up. So, you know, we've got the taxes that are actually calculated, and those are actualized. Other economic effects that we have here in the community is a lot of our shows, as we were talking about Phoenix being a bigger market, when I'm doing working with the clients and working with the clients doing their marketing and their ad buys, I like to go down into Southern Arizona and into Mexico. We know that there's a big contingency of folks coming up from Mexico for the weekend. They're looking for something to do. They're wanting to shop in the markets, you know, working very closely with the consulate, working very closely with Visit Tucson. And of course, we do have the conventions that occur at the convention center. So we have the Gem Show that is with us every February. We have two shows, American Gem Trade Association, which is a wholesaler show. They bring in about 4,000 out-of-town sleeping rooms.
Wow.
And that's just one of the 40-some-odd shows that are hosted across the community. During the summer months, we do have the Christian Congregation of Jehovah Witnesses, and they have about 7,000 people that attend per weekend. So,
wow.
And there's 7 weekends, and they're coming from all across the state, Texas, down in Mexico as well. So there's sleeping rooms that are realized based upon that convention as well.
And then they're going to restaurants.
Correct.
They're shopping.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in 2 weeks, we've got the Club Cactus volleyball tournament. So we'll have some of the local volleyball clubs along with Phoenix volleyball clubs and Texas volleyball clubs in the exhibit hall. And they'll be here over Martin Luther King weekend. And again, they too are they're shopping, sleeping rooms, rental cars, etc.
Wow. And what do you think, what's the total economic impact over the course of the year, if you had to take a rough stab at it?
A big number. I have seen so many figures as far as the economic impact. I can tell you that if you go to the Rio Nuevo website, there was a survey that was recently done. And Charlie Johnson was working on that survey with Rio Nuevo. And I believe some of those new numbers are actually in there.
Good to know. Some of my clients are interested in those numbers because they're in restaurant or hospitality. And it very much affects the little guy when the larger organizations are doing well.
It does. Yeah. So, also take a look at Visit Tucson and their website, and they can provide you with some statistics as well. And that would actually support the restaurateurs and the hotel questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the two of you with smaller venues, so you guys aren't hosting conferences. I don't know if people are coming down for overnight to go to concerts and such. How do you track your economic impact?
The Fox commissioned an economic impact study in 2016. So that data is a little bit old.
Okay.
But I think it's representative of what the Fox is bringing to the downtown. And at that point, they estimated $6.3 million brought into the downtown community,
wow.
About half of which came to the Fox directly. The other half went to surrounding businesses, primarily restaurants and bars. So truly a really impactful business to the downtown. And we're extrapolating that to about $10 million at this point in time, given the growth that has occurred with the Fox. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you for
a lot of
numbers.
Money.
It is a lot of money. And especially, you know, I know of some businesses that are taking a look at expanding this year. It's one of their goals, launch a secondary location. They're looking at rent rates and opportunities downtown. And so, you know, one of the first things that they start researching is what is exactly the opportunity down there? Is it something that just feels like we have really good momentum, or do we have measurable momentum that business owners can be making decisions on?
So we have that measurable info, but also I think if you look at the growth that's occurring in the downtown area right now, lots of residential housing going into the community, and that's a solid driver too for what's happening in the downtown area. So I think there's a number of areas to look at. Kate mentioned a couple. We have ours. I'm sure Curtis has theirs. But Chamber of Commerce, I think, is probably another good entity to check with.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot happening in downtown.
Mm-hmm.
There's streets are closed, but they're closed because there's buildings popping up.
Under construction.
Yep.
A lot of condos and mixed use space.
Exactly.
And, no, it's exciting. Finally.
Yep.
We've lived here since 1980, so it's nice to see a legit downtown.
Yeah.
Curtis, how about you?
Similarly, we had a economic impact survey done by students at the Eller Business School at the University of Arizona in 2017, and they found that our impact was kind of mirror to the Fox, and basically the direct revenue was doubled in terms of the overall impact. So for in our case, when they studied it, our revenue was $6.5 million and the overall impact was nearly $12 million to the downtown region. And then, you know, then estimates of indirect spending, because you have obviously out of that $6.5 million that is our revenue, much of it went to employees and people that then spend money at other businesses at times when they're not working across the city. So wages and things like that were again spent and sort of multiplied throughout the community. And we've also found that we attract people that want a getaway, and that'll come based around a concert. And I, as someone who does that in other cities on occasion, Los Angeles or sometimes Phoenix, I think Tucson is a really great place for that. If you can find a show that you're interested in coming to and you want to come to a place that's well known for being a tourist attraction in general because of weather and natural features and what have you. But if you can build that around and now increasingly robust urban experience and everything is easy. I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. You know, you go to L.A., and depending on where you stay, just getting around is a lot more difficult. It, it necessarily involves a car, and it's more expensive, et cetera. You can come to the same show. Let's say you live in Phoenix and you want to come down for a night. It's a either a quick drive or you, you know, take a even shorter flight and you stay at one of now the many hotel options that exist and more on the way. Obviously, there's the one going up over at the TCC.
Thank you, Curtis.
And
I was waiting to figure out how to get that in.
I was riding my bike down Church Street today and or Church Avenue and saw the other one going up across from the cathedral behind the Scottish Rite Temple in that lot. And I hadn't seen that progress yet until today. And I think it's a really cool option. And as some of you may know, I'm not sure if you do or not, but we were involved in a project that unfortunately fell apart. But there was a plan to build a, you know, essentially $80 million hotel project on our block that was going to connect with the Rialto.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And it was all sort of based upon this idea that people will, you make it attractive as a destination and they come and stay the night and go to a show and it's all kind of self-contained in our case on that block, but in general and for everything else within the downtown. And I think for surrounding areas in Arizona and Southern California and even New Mexico to a degree with the right kind of programming, that becomes an increasingly attractive destination for tourism based around live music or performance. And we've known and communicated, because we're especially interested in this, plenty of people who do just that. They'll come from even Northern California in some circumstances because they just love Tucson. Is kind of quaint in terms of its compactness and easy navigability relative to much bigger cities. And so, you know, it's a no-brainer for someone like that that's looking for a fun but casual experience. With the concentration of restaurants, with now hotels, and with great venues and programming, it is literally the easiest kind of getaway in the world to plan. So,
and sometimes it's fun just to play tourist in your own town.
For sure.
You know, everybody's got their heads down
staycation.
And you're grinding it out. Staycations are awesome. And just going across town and staying in a different venue and experiencing another part of Tucson. We're
I've
so spread out. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That is a lot of fun. That's definitely one of my New Year's resolutions, is to do more of those. We're going to take a quick break. This is Small Biz Big Voices, hosted by Stephanie Rising. I'm a small business coach on a mission to get business owners off their hamster wheel and empower them as authentic and influential leaders. My coaching program centers around the 7 primal business needs. Today, I'm visiting with Karen Fogus of the Fox Tucson Theater, Curtis McCrary of the Rialto Theater, and Kate Calhoun of the Tucson Convention Center. Now, you all aren't just coordinating all of this for others. You're also fans and consumers of pop culture yourselves. So I'm curious, what were some of your favorite events in 2019? And Curtis, I'm going to start with you.
So that's the only thing I actually wrote down in preparation for this, because a lot of times people ask me what's coming up and what were my favorite shows. This question comes up quite a bit. And it's never easy to just sort of, because it all just is kind of runs together when it's just you do it, you know, all day, every day.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go back through the list and highlight some things in particular that stood out to me. The most recent one was we had this up-and-coming act called the Black Pumas. They're from Austin, Texas, and we had them at our smaller venue, 191 Tool, which is a part of the Rialto Theater Foundation. At that address, as you might imagine. And they're just this incredible, the front person of the Black Pumas is this incredible singer with amazing performer energy. He's just one of those performers that really loves and appreciates the fact that people want to see him perform and cherishes that relationship between performer and audience. And so it's just incredible soul music, essentially, is how I would describe it. And there's one of their best songs actually is being featured on a Bank of America ad that you've probably seen 1,000 times over this holiday season, because I know that I have. And it's called, the song is called Colors, and it talks about all my favorite colors. And you may hear, listen for that the next time you see a Bank of America commercial.
Yeah, cool.
But they're going places. They're going to be very big. And I really enjoyed that show quite a bit. And then also in 2019, some other highlights where we had Blue Oyster Cult at the Rialto. And that was fun just because, you know, someone actually, you may remember the More Cowbell skit with Christopher Walken from Saturday Night Live. That has really stayed with them. I mean, that skit was like 15 years ago that ran. And a guy actually brought a cowbell to the show and kept banging it and annoying the crap out of the tour manager. But they're someone, that's a group that I, you know, when I was first getting into music, when I was like 10 years old or 11 years old, seeing their videos on MTV, that has just kind of stayed with me. And so it was really cool to have them at Rialto. And then Gary Clark Jr., who is this incredible blues guitar player and singer, and just was an honor to have someone of his caliber. He's also from Austin, Texas, and he has relatives that live in Tucson, so he has a Tucson connection as well. I forget if it's his father or uncle that lives here, but someone that's very close to Gary Clark lives here. And then we have this great band called Fantagram. They're from upstate New York, actually, but they put on a terrific show back in September, and it was really wonderful to have them. They're one of my favorite groups, and the singer lost her brother to suicide, and she had some really profound things to say about mental illness and getting help if you struggle. And so it's just really welcome to hear that in the context of, you know, just this super compelling show. So that was a great moment from 2019. And then coming up for us, the next show that I'm really excited about, I mean, there's lots that I enjoy, but we have a group called Yacht Rock Review in March. And what they do is have fun with so-called yacht rock, which is very akin to 70s soft rock and things like Steely Dan and Dan Fogelberg and Michael McDonald, who has played the Fox. And I really wanted to actually see him at the Fox and didn't have the chance to. But so kind of cheesy music that you would be listening to if you were cruising on a yacht in a captain's hat, and they have lots of fun with it. And so that is one that I've just always enjoyed, that genre and the kind of ridiculousness of it, but it's all great music to boot.
Yeah.
We have Buddy Guy coming again. I think this will be his fourth time at the Rialto, and he's also played the Fox at one point on his time around Tucson. So that's also in March. We have the Psychedelic Furs coming back in April. They're another one that I've loved since I was, you know, since I saw the movie Pretty in Pink when I was in, I don't know, seventh grade, eighth grade. And then finally, we're really excited to have Willie Nelson's son, Lucas, whose band, The Promise of the Real, is the backing band actually for Neil Young these days. But he does incredible music in his own right. And I remember when he was first starting out and playing shows with his dad and thinking, what a cool thing that to be able to have a son that is really a talented musician and be able to play with him in your own career. But Lucas's career, and that was, you know, probably 10 years ago when he first started out, but it's really taken off. So that's going to be a really terrific show. But I did not write down what the date of that show was. So you can find it on our website.
So you're just going to have to go to rialtotheater.com,
folks.
That's
correct.
Yeah. Karen, how about you? What were some of your favorites from last year, and what do you have coming up?
You know, the Fox is such an extraordinary venue. One of my favorites was one that actually was not well attended, unfortunately, truly unfortunately. It was Max Raab, which was a German orchestra that did music from the pre-war era, and I swear I would close my eyes and I could be in 1930 when the theater opened, and it was just kind of magical. I just really, really enjoyed that. Lots of shows last year, though. We had Oak Ridge Boys were there. Chris Isaac always does just an amazing show. He's just such high energy, spectacular performer. He's a good one. Leanne Rimes, Kip Moore, Aaron Neville. And then we had comedians as well. We ventured into partnerships with Live Nation more than we had done before. Mm. And so really we had Lewis Black, Tom Segura was here, all of the Live Nation shows were sold out. So there's definitely an audience for comedy in Tucson as well. So that was pretty fun. And coming up, we have the Jazz Festival just right around the corner. We partner with the Tucson Jazz Society. And so we've got David Sanborn, the Average White Band, Christian McBride, and Mavis Staples coming up.
I saw that. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, really going to be a good jazz series. Alan Parsons, Ani DeFranco is coming. Winona and the Big Noise, that'll be fun. That'll be a good one for our audiences. I think that's perhaps sold out by now. Lyle Lovett and the Capitol Steps, which I'm excited about because in this political environment, that's got to be a really good one, right? The Chieftains, Three Dog Night, and Amy Grant. So we just really hit the spectrum with this upcoming spring, but really good shows coming up.
Yeah, that's a diverse lineup.
Yeah, very diverse.
Kate, how about you?
You had mentioned Live Nation and the comedy shows. We just recently had Joe Coy, and he had a little bit of a blunder on social media. So we partnered with Tucson Police Department and Tucson Fire Department and had a grand time making fun of him on social media and coming up with some videos. And he was a delight when we met him and when our folks with the fire department and the police department got to meet him as well. So that was a terrific show. We actually had two performances in one night.
What was his blunder?
Tucson, New Mexico.
Oh,
he was
boy.
Coming to Tucson, New Mexico.
Oh,
that's a big one.
It was pretty big. I had visit Tucson, tell Joe Coy that it was Tucson, Arizona. And then the Tucson Fire Department did something that was really clever, all of which can be found on Twitter and our Twitter page. And then the police department did a 2-minute video that was just a sketch. So, and then of course we had Rob Thomas, who doesn't love Rob Thomas. And I'm kind of crazy. Some of the other events that I have really enjoyed, is the UTAG event. And that was with, Tucson, Electric Power, Tucson Fire Department and the Sheriff's Department, and they were in our, parking lot on the same day as, 10 West, and they were blowing things up in the parking lot, and they had this arc of electricity that they were putting on display, and we were blowing up donuts and hot dogs. So, I mean, it was a really exciting event that we did in October. So, who doesn't love working with Tucson Electric Power?
Who doesn't love blowing stuff up?
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. The sheriff's department blew something up, and, you know, I had to contact the mayor's folks to say, hey, just let him know that we're blowing stuff up in the parking lot. Everything's okay, because he was attending the Startup Tucson event. And then we just recently hosted the swearing-in ceremony for our first Latina mayor. So that was a lot of fun. I really enjoy working and planning those events. And upcoming, we've got Tony Bennett. So we're very excited about having him come in, and The Price is Right, which would be fun for girls' night, you know.
Was Tony Bennett at the
music hall? Yeah. And then we have Cirque du Soleil Axel, which is a new touring show that'll be here in April. I'm really looking forward to the telephone calls from the political candidates asking if they can book our facility to host a political rally. I get the opportunity to work with the police department and the city pretty closely when we're booking the political rallies.
Well, the Trump rally in 2016 really put Tucson on the map there after my friend Brian Sanders got punched out at the rally.
Can I tell you, I have worked many political rallies.
Yeah.
That was the best working experience that I've ever seen.
Really?
At one point, I had the chief of police behind me, and I was trying to escort somebody out of the building, and he wouldn't go. And the Chris Magnus said, "You need to leave." And he asked the police chief for his ID number.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It was very
badge number one.
Yeah, can I have your badge number? So, yeah, and that it was fascinating because the night before we had a Democrat and they were looking at booking another event on Sunday. So, I mean, it was just one after another.
Yeah.
So
this is going to be peak entertainment season for you then.
Yeah. I just find it very entertaining, actually. I really do. Have Bernie Sanders one night, Donald Trump the next night. Well,
let's just hope nobody else gets punched out.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's true. We do try to make it safe. And, you know, that's why we work very closely with the police department and with the city.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Tucson Roadrunners, they're kicking some serious bootay this year. So we're looking forward to all of their playoff games in the future. And
how was the event Saturday with the wing tasting and all of that?
Oh, it was Whiskey and Wings.
It was
fantastic.
Yeah. We thought about coming to that and didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. The Roadrunners are really trying to diversify their programming as well. So they had Whiskey and Wings before their game. They have one in February as well. It's Margaritas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then they've got Hops in March, and those are all pregame events.
But what are the food items, though, at those other two?
I can't tell you.
Oh, it's a secret?
Well, they're highlighting those, and then our catering department will come in and actually provide some food service for them. But the wings were provided by the different restaurateurs this last one.
You had me at Margaritas.
Yeah, that's in February. Oh, yeah.
I wrote that
Margarita
down.
Tasting. Absolutely. Yummy. Yummy.
Especially in Tucson. There's so many.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
I think that those
that's
were...
That's a lot.
Covered it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look at all the different things that are going on here. It's amazing.
If you can't find something in Tucson this spring, then...
You're boring.
Mm-hmm. You're pretty boring.
You can check out Tucson's diverse arts and entertainment scene and purchase tickets online at foxtucson.com, rialtotheater.com, and tucsonconventioncenter.com. And we're also going to list all of that for you in today's show notes. So next is our Proust lightning round. Are you guys ready?
Ready as I've ever been for anything.
The Proust questionnaire was a parlor game made popular by the French essayist and novelist Marcel Proust. He believed that by answering 35 specific questions, an individual reveals their true nature. We're going to go through as many questions as we can in just 3 minutes. So I'm going to ask one question. You each have the opportunity to answer, and I'll just go left to right. So, Kate, we'll start with you.
Pressure's on.
The pressure's on, sister. First out of the gate, what do you consider to be the most overrated virtue?
Emojis.
They're a virtue.
Of a text message.
I'm going to look at emojis all differently now. It's virtuous. Curtis, how about you?
I would say industriousness. I think it, obviously it's important to work hard, but as Ferris Bueller once said, life moves pretty fast.
Yes.
If you don't take a moment to enjoy it, it'll go right past you. And I totally mangled that quote, so sorry, Ferris. But no, I do think that people need to take the time to just appreciate life in all its forms and not be concerned with just grinding away at their job at all times.
I agree.
And looking at those emojis.
Yeah, that's right.
That was pretty good. You were first. So that was tough. And I'm going to say I'm totally in agreement with Curtis. I moved to Tucson thinking I'm going to slow down my life. I'm going to change things up. Came down and went like crazy, you know, worked all the time and didn't really enjoy the community like I should have. And a couple of years ago kind of did a rethink of that. And I would totally, totally agree that industriousness it's an important virtue, but it is overrated. And if you're too industrious, you can't come and enjoy all the things that we have to offer, right?
That's right.
That's right.
So,
all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
That's right. That's right.
You should be industrious for short periods of time and then reward yourself by going out and seeing a show.
There you go.
The second question is, on what occasion do you lie?
As you can see, well, you folks can't see me as you're listening, but as you can see me, I don't have a poker face by any means.
I would hazard that you suck at lying.
I totally do. I totally do. And, you know, it is what it is. You got what you got. So I don't think it's appropriate to lie at any time.
Anytime.
No.
How about you, Curtis?
I generally value honesty, and but I do lie to protect other people's feelings.
Yeah,
that's the main thing. You know, like I'll just go along with something rather than burst someone's bubble. It's like, you know, I think that people need to, you know, believe what they want to believe, and so I'm not very interested in unvarnished truth if that's going to be somehow hurtful to someone.
Yeah. How about you, Karen?
Completely agree. I can maybe get away with it on the phone if you can't see my face. I used to lie to my kids and say, yeah, I'm relaxing, right? But no, I'm like Kate. It's all over my face. And I don't have a good enough memory to lie either. Because you got to remember what you said.
Yeah, lying is work.
Yeah.
It is.
Too much work.
It's a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Too much. But I do catch myself if it's to spare someone's feelings.
Yeah, for sure.
The little white lies.
Yeah. For sure. And it's kind of not really lying. I mean, it's just withholding the truth.
Omission.
Know? Yeah, omission.
Yeah. Kind of feel like that categorizes as lying, but yeah.
Depends on the context.
It works.
Yeah.
You can get by with that. The last one is, which words or phrases do you most overuse?
I'm thinking, so I teach group fitness programs and they all give me a hard time because I say, do you like it? Do you like it? Do you like it?
Do you like the pain?
Do you like the pain?
Do you like the burn?
So I would have to say, you know, when I'm wearing my group fitness hat, that would probably be the most overused phrase that I actually use. And in life, awesome. Everything's awesome. So if I can eliminate that word from my vocabulary or replace it with another word, that would be terrific.
It'll probably be terrific.
It'll be awesome.
How about you?
I say sweet and nice or nice far too often. those two come to mind. And I know there's some phrases and nothing's really popping into my head. But if I could scrub those out of my vocabulary a little bit, I think I'd be better off.
Karen, how about you?
I'm an awesome person, too. I use that way too much. Or fantastic. That's fantastic. Not everything is fantastic.
Yeah.
But you as a panel are. So you get to do it today. We're going to conclude the show with Dear Coach. I'd love to have you all chime in at the end of our last segment. Dear Coach gives our listeners the chance to have their emailed questions addressed. And today it's a riff on a New Year's topic that comes up a lot with clients this time of year, and it's what I call New Year's goal bloat. This is the time of year that people love the feeling of a clean slate. It feels good to kick off the new year with goals and that sense of a fresh start. But when you're thinking of what you'd like to accomplish this year, remember that it's a marathon, not a sprint. And like a marathon, to achieve your goals, you need to chunk them down into defined progressive milestones. I suggest beginning with the end and working backwards from there. So here's some ideas for how to start. First, so many of us just jumped on the hamster wheel and think that because it's spinning, we must be accomplishing something. But activity doesn't always equate to meaningful action. Think about where you want your efforts to take you. Do you have a clear destination in mind? Life can change quickly, so I personally think it doesn't make sense to imagine this much past the next 3 years. Ask yourself, in 3 years, what are your goals around revenue, profit, employees, facilities, markets? Think in terms of things that you can measure, so there's a way to track your progress over time. Also, thinking in these terms will help create checks and balances around your decisions. Whenever you consider hiring someone, or signing up for a marketing program, or buying a piece of equipment, you want to develop a default mode that automatically questions how those decisions support your goals. Once this is clear in your mind and you feel connected to where you want your business to go, the next step is to think about this year. Think in terms of the outcomes that will give you the most bang for the buck. And I know I've mentioned this on the show before, but it's my favorite metaphor and it bears repeating. A speaker at a conference I once attended said that when you're swimming in the ocean and you slap your arm on the surface of the water as hard as you can create a small splash. But when the Earth's crust shifts even an inch, it can create a tsunami. And that's because all of the focus and energy is concentrated at a foundational level. So the moral of the story is you can avoid New Year's goal bloat by not splashing around in surface level goals. Pick the few things that will significantly shift your business in the right direction. Then brain dump everything you think you need to do to make that happen. Once you've brain dumped, start prioritizing your actions. You may very well wind up with a long list of tasks, but don't let that deter you. What's important is to take your time and chunk everything down into a sequence that makes sense. When you take care of one critical thing early on, it can automatically resolve five lesser tasks or make them significantly easier. One of the things I started doing in 2019 was beginning my day with an hour of work that moved my business forward. I get up, I get on the computer before I'm 100% awake. Like my brain is turned on, but that distracting chatter in my head is still asleep. I work only on things that are part of my purpose. I do not use it for busy work or emails, which means I move through the rest of my day with a sense of accomplishment rather than having all of the should have done's hanging over me, which sap my energy. So to recap, first identify where you're going to take your business, then list what it's going to take to get there, chunking everything down into bite-sized tasks. Next, prioritize your tasks and establish a routine for when you can tackle them with focus. And last but most importantly, take the time to celebrate your wins, preferably at one of your local entertainment venues. So we have a few minutes left. Again, I'll just go left to right. Could you each take a minute and just share a tip for how you personally approach your goals, especially this time of year when it's tempting to sprint?
Mm-hmm. I think that communication is key, whether it be self-talk or whether it be talk amongst the team as we're planning the year ahead and we're getting ready for a successful 2020. I also think that taking a look at the financial pages is also key. And making sure that we're meeting those financial goals that are set by the powers that be.
Cool. Thank you, Kate.
Mm-hmm.
Curtis, how about you?
I mean, I tend to not look at things in those kinds of terms. It's sort of just take it as it comes. But the fact is that it is a sort of pivotal point for us. We spent, you know, a lot of the year from April of 18 until 19, when the deal fell apart, working on this concept of hotel and theater combination. Spent a lot of my personal time on that, and it detracted honestly from where my focus should have been. And 2019 was a tough year to get through, but we did, and now we kind of have some momentum going into 2020. I'm really liking how our calendar looks, and so I naturally don't necessarily go into a new year saying I'm going to achieve X, Y, and Z. Another thing is that we are on a fiscal year, as I know the Fox is, that ends in, or no, you're on a calendar fiscal year, right? Yeah. So we're on a fiscal year that ends June 30th. So we're halfway through our fiscal year at this point. But I don't get bogged down necessarily personally in goal bloat, although with respect to work, although maybe personally I do that a little bit, but I instead just sort of try to use it as a motivating factor, the clean slate, to really focus in on the core reason for being. And that's what I'm intending, and what we're on our way toward doing in 2020 is a really focused recommitment on programming, because it's such an integral part of our mission and our existence. And the other thing that is going to be kind of a galvanizing thing for us in 2020 is that it is our 100th anniversary coming up in August.
Yeah.
And I should say, of the building, the organization is 15 years old, but the building is going to be 100, and that is a great basis for sort of celebrating and rallying around and saying places like the Rialto and like the Fox and like the TCC are super important to keep going. I mean, they're the soul of a community in many respects. And so we're going to use that as fuel to make 2020 a much, much better year than 2019 was, and beyond that, to whatever degree possible.
That is, dare I say, awesome.
Yeah.
Sweet. Would you like an emoji with that?
I'll add it to the show notes.
Fantastic.
Karen, how about you? How do you tackle these things?
Personally, I'm very goal-oriented, so that works well for me. And having a personal mission statement helps keep me to stay grounded in the midst of that. But we have some exciting opportunity with the Fox, because we are going to have a new executive director in 2020.
Wow.
And so I think with that, we'll have some goals of maintaining the relationships that we've had with the community and with our donors and our supporters and our patrons that have come to mean so much to us over the years, but also bring somebody new in with some fresh ideas and some fresh eyes to the community to, set some new goals for our organization as well, which I think is pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Don't always have that opportunity. And so it's going to be fun.
And I'm just making it a note to myself, bringing in some objectivity.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Most definitely. We all get kind of entrenched in what we're doing and how we see things. And so it's going to be good to have somebody come in, not just to the Fox, but into the community. I think this person will come from outside the community. And so I think that will be an interesting reflection process too. And so that's really good. And we're 10 years behind the Rialto, but we have a 90th anniversary as well for the building. And so that's exciting to be part of that history and to celebrate those entities and their roles within the community and how that's changed over the years, but kept its meaning. So it's going to be quite a good year.
And I'm very excited for 2020, and especially what it's going to bring for all of your venues and also directly to Tucson. So thank you again for everything that you three do. That brings us to the end of today's episode. If you have a question or problem you'd like for us to talk about during our Dear Coach segment, please email me at Stephanie@therisingeffect.com. I invite you to follow the show on our Small Biz Big Voices Facebook page, which includes show notes and announcements for upcoming shows. For December, I had scheduled an interview with celebrated Tucson artist Diana Medeiros. Unfortunately, I lost my voice with a holiday bug, so we're rescheduling Diana as quickly as possible for our next show. My thanks again to today's guests, Karen Fogus of the Fox Tucson Theater, Curtis McCrary of the Rialto Theater, and Kate Calhoun of the Tucson Convention Center. My thanks also to my producer, Mark Bishop, and to you for joining us on Small Biz Big Voices.